And that brings us to the interval of this live concert from the Barbican Hall, the final concert in the BBC Symphony Orchestra's John Cage Uncaged weekend. While it's the final concert of the festival at the Barbican, it's not, however, the final broadcast, because tomorrow night in Performance on 3 on BBC Radio 3, you can hear the concert the BBC Symphony Orchestra gave last night, with works by Varèse, Satie and Ruggles, as well as Cage. But back to tonight. In the second half of this concert, the BBC Symphony Orchestra itself will be back on the stage when it's been heavily cleaned up, and they'll be playing music by Lou Harrison, Morton Feldman and a UK premiere, John Cage's 101. That's in about 20 minutes or so. During the interval, Ivan Hewitt explores a non-musical preoccupation of John Cage.
Lead poisoner. Death cap. Fly agaric. The panther. Weeping slime veil. Hairy bracket. Common deceiver. Strong-scented bluet. Plums and custard. Soap-scented nightcap. Spindle shank. Fetid mummy cap.
What are these creatures with such exotic and sinister names? Well, believe it or not, they're all varieties of the humble mushroom. Those names tell us that these harmless-looking creatures arouse a good deal of fascination. And there is something a bit uncanny about them, about the way they spring into being overnight and those strange fairy rings they often grow in. And some of them do look distinctly weird, with their bright yellow and rust colours and their strange waxy shapes looking like some alien life form. But there are thousands of people like me for whom mushrooms aren't odd or sinister at all. We just love them, and we'll give up whole weekends to look for them. Mycology, as it's called, attracts all sorts of people, even the occasional creative genius.
Dorothy Norman invited me to dinner in New York. There was a lady there from Philadelphia who was an authority on the When she found out I was interested in mushrooms, she said, "Have you an explanation of the symbolism involved in the death of the Buddha by his eating a mushroom?" I explained that I'd never been interested in symbolism, that I preferred just taking things as themselves, not as standing for other things. But then a few days later, while rambling in the woods, I got to thinking. I recalled the Indian concept of the relation of life and the seasons. Spring is creation, summer is preservation, fall is destruction, winter is quiescence. Mushrooms grow most vigorously in the fall, the period of destruction, and the function of many of them is to bring about the final decay of rotting material. In fact, as I read somewhere, the world would be an impassable heap of old rubbish were it not for mushrooms and their capacity to get rid of it. So I wrote to the lady in Philadelphia. I said, "The function of mushrooms is to rid the world of old rubbish. The Buddha died a natural death."
John Cage, founder member of the New York Mycological Society. Cage once won a lot of money on an Italian TV quiz show with mushrooms as his chosen subject. And whenever he travelled abroad, he could hardly wait to get away from the rehearsal venue and take a walk in the local woods with his collecting box. So what is it that makes this oddball organism so interesting? Someone who's been studying them for years is the microbiologist Elio Schechter.
The fungi belong to a kingdom all of their own. And the reason they're not plants, even though they might look like some, is that they do not have chlorophyll. Therefore, they do not carry out photosynthesis like plants do, but like animals have to eat what somebody else makes, what plants make. They also reproduce in a funny way. They have spores instead of seeds. In general, they fit together as a different group, and in fact, of all things, seem to be closer to animals in their evolution than they are to plants.
Shaggy foot mummy cap, bleeding bonnet, porcelain fungus, saffron powder cap, porphyry pink gill, golden green shield cap. There are old mushroom hunters and there are bold mushroom hunters, but there are no old, bold mushroom hunters.
Ah, this fungus here is called the birch polypore. Its Latin name is Piptoporus betulinus. And another common name was razor strop fungus, and because people used to apparently sharpen their razors on it. Very common.
It looks very tough. It looks like you'd have to pull very hard to get that off.
Yes, it is a tough thing.
Well, now, that's one of the obvious fungi up here in Hampstead Heath, but, Andy, I suppose when you come up here to do your recording, you spot some much more obscure and difficult to find things.
Yeah, yeah. What I find myself doing is I sort of rummage into bushes and dips and hollows and areas like that just to see if there's anything there. And sometimes you can get some odd looks.
I'm sure you can.
Wondering what you're doing.
Andy Overall, chief recorder of a mycological society based near Hampstead Heath in London called Fungi to Be With. These days, all kinds of people look for mushrooms. Andy is an ex-punk rocker. But in the early days of mycology, it was a pastime of gentlemen with plenty of leisure time. The first mushrooming club in Britain, the Woolhope Naturalists Field Club, was founded in 1851 by clergymen and doctors, and they certainly took their fungi seriously.
Dr. Cook, furnished with a large leathery travelling trunk in place of a handbasket or a tin collecting case, was one of the first to arrive in the forest. By 4 p.m., the doctor's phenomenal portmanteau was full of funguses. Where one generally looks for a toothbrush, might be found a phallus. In place of a sponge was a bloated boletus. In lieu of writing paper, sheets of dry rot, and shirts were shirked. Fungi, both fresh and frothy, were all in the compartment of the valise. No one but an advanced fungologist would so treat a portmanteau.
Most of the organism is actually either underground or inside of rotting trees or wood. You don't see it because it's composed of microscopic filaments. But once in a while, they decide to reproduce, they go for sex, and out pops a mushroom, which is visible over, above the surface. And it's a little bit like considering the apple of an apple tree. What you don't see is the apple tree, you only see the apple here.
Common stinkhorn. White egg bird's nest, giant puffball, scaly earth ball, shaggy parasol, red staining mushroom, lawyer's wing, glistening ink cap.
So now here we've got something that looks rather different. Now, what do you think this would be, Andy?
That's a small ink cap, commonly called a glistening ink cap, Coprinus micaceus.
Right, because it's got this little pattern on top.
Yeah. And it's beginning to auto-digest, which is what they actually do. They actually eat themselves and become an inky mass.
How sinister. So if I hold this for long enough, I'll end up with inky hands.
Yeah. And they used to use, of the common ink cap, which is bigger than this, they used to actually use the ink for writing with.
Well, that's three or four species in...
It's not bad, is it? Because it's quite mild for this time of year, and we've had a fair amount of rain, things will fruit. But it will be the stuff on the wood, mainly. Stuff growing on wood where it's soaked, the wood's soaked, and it's warm enough for the fungus to fruit.
What are ideal conditions?
When you've had a really hot sort of beginning to the summer, and then you get a prolonged period of rain, that's fantastic.
There's a street in Stony Point, in a lowland near the river, where a number of species of mushrooms grow abundantly. I visit this street often. A few years ago in May, I found the morel there, a choice mushroom which is rare around Rockland County. I was delighted.
People like John Cage and Andy Overall are unusual because, on the whole, Anglo-Saxons don't like mushrooms. Unlike, say, the Spaniards or the Russians, who go out to the countryside in their thousands to look for them. No, we think mushrooms are a bit sinister, and we always have done.
Poisonous mushrooms groweth where old iron lieth, or rotten clouts, or near to serpents' dens, or roots of trees that bring forth venomous fruit. Therefore I give my advice unto those who love such strange and new-fangled meats to beware of licking honey among the thorns, lest the sweetness of the one do not countervail the sharpness and pricking of the other. To conclude, few of them are good to be eaten, and most of them do suffocate and strangle the eater. John Gerard's Herbal of 1597.
Strange and newfangled meats. That's an odd way to describe things that have been on this planet for a very long time. By the time humanity emerged, fungi had already been around for eons. A recognisable mushroom has been found in a piece of fossilised amber that's 90 million years old. And the evidence for mankind's fascination with mushrooms also goes way back. The early hominid Uzi, found perfectly preserved in ice in the Italian Alps, was clutching a piece of fungus in his 10,000-year-old fist. Once they started to use fungi, our ancestors noticed they weren't quite like other creatures, and they invented all kinds of myths to explain why.
The legend rose in different cultures that mushrooms were the result of thunderbolts striking the earth. And you find that in very diverse cultures. The Romans and the Greeks believed that. So did the Mayans in Middle America. So did the Filipinos. So the fact that mushrooms come up from the ground in what looks like an overnight growth certainly makes people stop and think and attribute magic properties to them. In reality, they don't grow quite that fast. A lot of what you see when a mushroom pops out is that the cells get filled up with water and get bigger that way. But it's clear that seeing a mushroom pop out of the ground so rapidly is reason for thought.
Alder scalehead, violet web cap, splendid web cap, charcoal burner, saffron milk cap, penny bun, Satan's bolete, old man of the woods, devil fingers.
Some of them are so bizarre. I don't mind telling you about the mushroom by the descriptive name of Phallus impudicus, which looks, in fact, like the male organ, except that the top of it is greenish. And here you are in the forest looking at this object, which seems certainly odd. In addition, it smells to high heaven because in order to spread its spores, it emits an odor which attracts insects. They get their feet stuck in the spore mass and then they fly or crawl elsewhere and disperse the spores that way. But imagine what it's like for a person not quite versed in modern science walking through the woods and finding this incredibly strongly smelling object looking like a penis.
In our native woods, there grows a kind of toadstool called in the vernacular the stinkhorn, though in Latin it bears a grosser name. This name is justified, for the fungus can be hunted by the scent alone. And this was Aunt Etty's greatest invention. Armed with a basket and a pointed stick and wearing special hunting cloak and gloves, she would sniff her way round the wood, pausing here and there, her nostrils twitching when she caught whiff of her prey. Then, at last, with a deadly pounce, she would fall upon her victim and then poke his putrid carcass into her basket. At the end of the day's sport, the catch was brought back and burnt in the deepest secrecy on the drawing-room fire, with the doors locked, because of the morals of the maids.
Mushrooms and sex, who would have thought it? Actually, it wasn't just the prudish Victorians who made that connection.
The Lapland youth carefully keeps a bracket fungus in a pouch hanging in front of his pubes, that its lovely odour may render him more acceptable to his favoured maiden. Oh, whimsical Venus! In other regions you may be treated with coffee and chocolate, jewels and pearls, music and theatrical exhibitions. Here you are satisfied with a little withered fungus. Yellow spindles, meadow coral fungus, giant club, crested coral fungus, false morel, curly-haired elf.
The edible side is fascinating because on top of going around and looking for them, it's also fascinating eating them. So I suppose I am a mycologist because I like to study them. Then I am a mycophagist because I like to eat them. And I am probably a mycophile because I love them.
The Mushroom Man, otherwise known as renowned Italian chef Antonio Carluccio. So what are his favourites?
Well, it depends, actually. Obviously, I would say the porcino because everybody says the same, the sep or the penny bun, as you call it. But I have love also for the honey fungus, which is a fantastic fungus. which raw is poisonous, but cooked is fantastic. And I developed a recipe with pasta, with spaghetti. And it's so simple, you just boil this honey fungus, which incidentally destroys the trees. You know that is a pest. People in the woods, you know, that they would like to see them banned. And my revenge is that I eat it. When it's small, you just blanch it, and then you plunge it into a little bit of olive oil, garlic, and parsley, and chili, and you already have the sauce. You put add the pasta, and that's it.
Interesting that you boil them, because on the whole, that's an unusual way of cooking a mushroom.
Well, it needs heat, you know, to destroy the toxins. And you could do it in a pan, saute in a pan, but in a pan, you are never sure that they are also cooked in the middle. So in boiling them for 3 or 4 minutes, you know that they are thoroughly cooked.
Common morel, thimble cap, pig's ears, bladder cup, shaggy earth tongue, jelly babies, large purple drop, anemone cup.
Is there a particular fungus that's in fashion now, or that you're particularly interested in?
Well, more than fashion, I suppose there's one that was bothering me for years and years and years, how to cook it, how to deal with it, because it doesn't taste of mushroom. It's rather sour. Doesn't look like a mushroom. It looks just like a piece of liver. In fact, it's called a Fistulina hepatica in Latin, and because it looks like a liver. And it's a bracket fungus that grows on old oak trees. And you look around September, October, then you find all those blobs coming out of the tree, which if you cut it sort of in vertical way, it looks just like a tongue, a sort of ox tongue. What you have to do is to slice it very thinly. It gives a sort of reddish taint. Then you cook it in a little bit of butter, you fry, and there's a sort of lovely texture. And then you add a little bit of double cream, and the most important thing, dill. The dill and salt and pepper give quite a lovely flavor, and you can eat it. The little acidity of the mushroom compensates the cream, and you had this flavoring that was fantastic.
Toothy jelly, golden chanterelle, trumpet chanterelle, yellow spindles, meadow coral fungus, giant club, crested coral fungus, false morel, curly-haired elf cup, lemon peel fungus, common eyelash cup, bog beacon, Pope's buttons, green stain.
I enrolled in a class in mushroom identification. The teacher was a PhD and the editor of a publication on mycology. One day he picked up a mushroom, gave a good deal of information about it, mainly historical, and finally named the plant as Pluteus cervinus edible. I was certain that that plant was not Pluteus cervinus. Due to the attachment of its gills to the stem, it seemed to me to be an enteloma and therefore very possibly seriously poisonous. I thought, what shall I do? Point out the teacher's error or, following school etiquette, saying nothing, let other members of the class possibly poison themselves? I decided to speak. I said, I doubt whether that mushroom is Pluteus cervinus. I think it's an enteloma. The teacher said, well, we'll key it out. This was done, and it turned out that I was right. The plant was Enteloma grayanum, a poisonous mushroom. The teacher came over to me and said, if you know so much about mushrooms, why do you take this class? I said, I take this class because there's so much about mushrooms I don't know. Then I said, by the way, how is it that you didn't recognize that plant? He said, well, I specialize in the jelly fungi. I just give the fleshy fungi a whirl.
So what have we got there, Andy?
I'm not sure. It looks a bit like a Panellus. Actually, not Panellus, Lentinellus. And if it is, then it's a very good one. It's a slight, can you see a slight pink tinge to it?
Oh yes, when you get up close, it's got a sort of funnel shape, yeah. And gills underneath as well.
I'll have to get it home and have a good look, check it out.
And then will it go into the frying pan, do you think?
No.
No?
Most definitely not.
So on a cold winter's day on Hampstead Heath, we've done pretty well, haven't we, Andy?
I think we've done very well, yes. I think the conditions are right for it. You know, when it's quite mild, been some rain. Mushroom growth.
And you've got your find.
And we've got a find, yeah. So I have you to thank for that.
The simplest and most lumpish fungus has a peculiar interest to us. Go compared with a mere mass of earth, because it is so obviously organic and related to ourselves, however remote. It is the expression of an idea, growth according to a law, matter not dormant, not raw, but inspired, appropriated by spirit. If I take up a handful of earth, however separately interesting the particles may be, their relation to one another appears to be that of juxtaposition generally. I might have thrown them together thus. But the humblest fungus betrays a life akin to our own.
Well, with all due respect to Thoreau, I can't honestly say I feel a great kinship with a puffball. What I feel is something quite the opposite, something I think would explain the appeal of mushrooms to John Cage. It's a sense of mysteriousness in the everyday, the thrill of secret life forms lurking under one's very feet.
If you added up the biomass, the whole mass of fungi on Earth, a conservative estimate would be something like 3 tons of fungi per human being. So they're all over. And that's probably a big underestimate, probably many more than that. So it's a substantial amount of stuff, and they are essential for life on Earth because they are the great recyclers. If it weren't for fungi, plant material would accumulate and not be destroyed. Even termites that eat wood need fungi in their gut as well as bacteria to digest the wood. So without fungi, we would be stuck. The carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would all remain in plant material, and life would come to a screeching halt.
Well, there is that. But personally, when I find a nice young chanterelle, it's not the fate of the planet I think about. It's a sizzling frying pan.
Sulfur tuck, soft slipper toadstool, coffin webcap, weeping fairy cake, ugly milk cap, jack-o'-lantern, dead man's fingers, beech woodwort, Jew's ear, leafy brain fungus, black brain fungus, cauliflower fungus, common chanterelle, horn of plenty, white spindles, pipe club, red stem tuber club, jelly antler,